Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Well, thanks again for inviting me on. Jim, it's always a delight to connect with your audience.
Rick, as we're speaking, the U.S. stock markets and Canadian stock markets down once again. This seems to be the overall trend. Yet there still seems to be this attitude, oh, it's about to bounce back. Is that a scary attitude?
It's a pisser, you know. I tracked a pattern that really, it gave me a target down there at 38.50, I think it was, in the E-mini S&Ps. And from the January 4th high. So I would say we've been through the first phase of the bear market, the easy phase, and I think that eventually, you know, we're going to get down to prices. I'm not going to give you a Dow target, lest some of your audience think that I'm out of my mind, but it's a kind of unimaginable number. You know, we're not in an ordinary bear market, and to the extent that things got just a wee bit, a tad overdone, on the way up, they're going to get to a tad overdone coming down. But in the meantime, so we've had this big move that culminated in a bottom on the 20th of May, and we're a few weeks out from that. We rallied, and the rally is showing, the first bear rally is not showing the kind of vigor that you would expect from bears just panicking to get them back. And so we rallied a bit. And for the last 2 weeks, the market, the broad averages, S&Ps have just been skittering sideways. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with these sellers? They just can't break it down. E-mini S&Ps basis June, currently trading 4086. I'm looking for 4309 on that. And I have to say, you know, looking at the big pattern, I don't see how that cannot be reached. And yet I'm seeing no energy at all to push this thing higher. So you could say I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Amazon splitting their stock, what does that tell us?
Yeah, and everybody, the popular myth among the idiots who like get their information from newspapers is, oh, you know, the stock split, that's bullish. The 20-for-1 split in Amazon simply means that the thieves and scoundrels who manipulate that stock for a living are looking to unload it on the public. And of course, it's very difficult to unload anything that's selling for $2,200 a share. It's 100% institutionally owned. So they split it so that they can start finally selling Amazon to pensioners and widows and orphans and foundlings. Because that's not that they're going to be able to unload a great deal of it, but of course if they can cheat the retail public in any way, even in a small way, it's always worth it for them to do it.
Mm-hmm. So the message here, there is anybody else that you know of thinking of also doing a split with the same intent?
Well, anytime a stock splits, that's what it means. It means that the insiders and the thieves are really just trying to unload it on an unwary public. So that's another sign, I guess, that the market overall is in distribution for another big leg down. They have to let the air out of the balloon, but as slowly as possible. I see that Facebook now is FB is an incorrect symbol, so they're switching to Meta, whatever it is, Metaverse or whatever the new name for it is. We can pretty much ignore that, and I don't know whether they didn't have to split it, but the other stocks that are splittable are Google and Chipotle, maybe Tesla. You know, that Tesla's already been split, humongously. And, so you might see a split in Google.
Now, what really has you concerned, though, is what's going on with real estate.
Yeah, it's real estate is a dead duck right now. You've got so many things impacting on it. Number one, the prices are insanely high. And it happened on relatively little transaction volume. You know, if you've been out there shopping houses, you know that there's not like a lot of inventory. So, but a relatively small number of sales have repriced the average home at the margin way up there. So homes are really unaffordable, more so than at any other time in history, I would guess. And the availability stinks. And if you are, let's say, a baby boomer wanting to downsize, you've got a real problem because there's nobody can afford to buy your house. It's not like we can sell them to millennials. And over time, we're going to see what I would call the trade down market. It's going to get very impacted. To describe it in kind of generic terms, it's baby boomers stuck with too much house and no one to sell them to. You know, we pretty much know that the millennials or people in the age bracket, let's say 25 to 40, they can't afford to buy those homes. And it's predictable that when we baby boomers die, the homes are going to just get dumped into estates and the kids will get the homes. They can't afford them. They won't be able to afford the taxes on them. And that has enormous consequences for the local, the taxing authority. So any town that is sort of built to development of baby boomer places that sell in that, let's say, $500,000 to $2 million range, and we know there's a huge number of them out there, there's no market for those homes. So that's well down the road, of course, but they're going to wind up they won't even be distressed sales because there'll be nobody to sell them to. So we're in the very beginning of a housing bust right now, and it does come from the insanely high prices, the rising mortgage rates, and the lack of inventory. So between those three things, there's just no way we're getting around a housing collapse, and it will certainly accelerate and turbocharge the recession that began maybe 6 weeks ago officially. It was just about the time that Goldman Sachs put out a little thing that said that they thought the odds of a recession in this country were 15% over the next 12 months and 25% over, I think, maybe it was 2 years. And of course, we know that when they say things like that, it means that we're already in recession.
Yes, recession, again, they always say officially 2 quarters with negative growth. The U.S. has had a quarter with negative growth. What do you think their next quarterly announcement will be?
Well,
will they pad
really
numbers?
We're going to feel the impact of how unreal the alleged prosperity is. You know, it's basically been rooted in asset inflation. And even as everybody's been getting quote-unquote rich because their house increases in value, not that any of them will ever realize that value because, as I said, there's no one to sell it to. So the economy is kind of a falsehood. If you look at it in real ways, like the fact that so many people have dropped out of the labor force and so many businesses are running just about on an empty tank, a lot of businesses they're just throwing in the towel. The few that survived COVID, the independent businesses, they continue to fold up. I'm at the Jersey Shore right now, and just a block away, there's a big, big restaurant that's been in business for decades. It's called Clancy's, and Clancy's just closed its doors. So we know anecdotally and in our lives just how many local businesses have failed, how many open storefronts there are, and how impossible it is to get to start up a new business like a new restaurant right now. So the service economy is hurting in that way. We're getting a little bit of respite and illusion here because we've just entered the summer season and people are really horny to get out there on the road. So they're traveling and I guess we're having a good summer season for tourism, but it's really pent-up demand that will fade as the summer ends. And so I think we're facing the real problems in the economy that we've all seen, and wherever we live, whatever town it is, just look around at the businesses, and a lot of them are just kind of scraping by.
Yes, and here in Vancouver, the mayor suggested the solution to all these boarded up businesses was to put another tax on the owners to encourage them to open up again. I don't understand how adding tax to a closed business encourages them to open.
Right. Well, that's how our bureaucrats think. And, you know, you have other things impacting on business in odd ways. There's the obsession of our Department of Transportation or whoever to make it, to make people who drive cars feel guilty about it. So, you know, in this little seashore resort where I live, they've taken a good wide street, a good thoroughfare called Atlantic Avenue that runs parallel to the beach, a block from the beach, and they painted it up so that it's now single-file traffic getting stopped at every corner with a red light. So the drive that used to take you maybe 7 minutes takes 22 minutes to get up to Atlantic City, and they painted out the middle one lane with a left turn lane that's completely unnecessary. And they've taken the other side and painted in a very wide, big enough for 12 bicycles abreast, a bicycle path, leaving just a squeezed lane for the single lane for traffic. So in places where they tried that in Boulder, where I lived for a while, and there was such a scream that Boulder of all places unpainted the streets and at least allowed traffic to flow along an artery that they'd spent, you know, $18-20 million just trying to make traffic flow. So then they painted all the lanes closed. And in Berkeley, you know, Berkeley was really the first to jump on the idea of criminalizing automobiles ownership. And so in the prime commercial area where you have Shattuck and Telegraph, they eliminated so many parking spaces that, well, it took them a while to discover that all the retail places along the way were shuttering down. You know, they basically killed the commercial district of Berkeley. And, so these are things that are also, impacting on, it's so hard to get out there and do business unless you're doing it online that all of these things, I think, will contribute to a recession that's a little bit more than what we're used to.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Getting back to real estate, how about office spaces? People are returning to the office. Some companies are insisting people return, but we've already seen surveys that say about a third of employees say if they have to go back to the office full time, they'd rather quit. And they know with the job market right now being hot for people and a lot of availabilities, the worker seems to have the hammer right now when it comes to picking working conditions. Are companies wrong to insist that people come back and often to city cores where you're going to have to step over a lot of extra homeless people who will beg you for money every step of the way?
Well, yeah, wish them good luck with that. You know, yeah. Getting people to come back to the office. It's in New York, there's an enormous amount of free commercial space there up at the higher levels. And it's never going to return, you know, and to the extent that buildings will never, ever be anywhere near full again, the amenities at street level will die. I mean, everything from the pushcart vendors to the concert halls and movie theaters and restaurants, that's what New York faces. And it happens below ground, too, because the subway system is not generating capacity revenues to pay the $110,000 retirement packages to those people who sit behind the glass windows and dispense tokens. If even there may not even be any of those left, you know, we go into some of the big transit systems like BART and you think, well, there's nobody running it, you know, there's not even anyone driving the train anymore. So we see there've been so many people furloughed in so many industries, and of course, this will be another exacerbating factor in this recession because so many jobs have been eliminated, and of course, a whole bunch of them are still yet to fall, like bank tellers and people who work in banks. They don't seem to realize that's all going to go away. So we're getting into the stage where I think Bill Gates' plan makes sense, where you start taxing robots, because otherwise you're going to have a huge bunch of unemployed people with no means of supporting themselves.
Yeah, that's something about AI that we've discussed on several shows before, is I think in Europe they're also suggesting a robot tax. If you replace a person, then that robot has to somehow support the person it replaced.
Yeah, and it's so creepy to think about, you know, AI being what's taking over. Everything we're going to do, we'll never get to talk to a human being again. It's all going to be dealing with robots and machines. And you know, everybody knows what a horrible job they do, but no firms want to talk to their customers anymore. So we're stuck talking to bots and voice-driven menus, and it's pretty horrible. And you know, to be going in that direction, you got to realize that the AI can't even create a decent vending machine. I drove up from Florida to New Jersey, and I stopped at some of the rest areas, and they have vending machines, and they don't even, you put a dollar in, and they don't even know what to do with the dollar. You can't, you put the dollar in, and the machine doesn't do anything, and you want to kick it and topple it over, but they're heavier than they used to be. It's harder to do that, and in this case, the machines were at one of the rest areas. They were behind steel bars, so either people were carting these machines off in the dead of night, to loot them of the $13 in the change, you know, in a coin box, or they were just stealing the machines. Maybe they were stealing them for the potato chips or whatever. So we're really, as far as the AI can't even handle spell check, you know, or autocomplete. And now we're, of course, there's all this hubris about how we're going to have driverless autos, but that ain't happening.
Yes, if the cars, they get confused in rain and snow. And I went, well, in Canada, that makes them pretty useless.
Right. I mean, to talk about the driverless cars, when we see AI being so freakishly stupid in so many of the little things that we encounter each day, it's completely absurd. You know, I believe in AI if we've got, you know, certain highway loops and then you just get on them and everybody's got their AI car. But we're a long way from that. And how companies like GM supposedly put $5 billion into AI, where did the money go?
So, Rick, with uncertainty in real estate and the stock markets, where should people be putting their money right now?
Well, you know, for a long time I've talked about that barbell, and it's really been crap. You know, the barbell was simply a position exposure in bullion, gold, and or silver, and the other half of it in treasury. So we've had this horrific decline in the price of treasury paper and a corresponding increase in rates. I was not all in with that, though, and I've been saying for some time, wait for interest rates to top before you do the bond side of the barbell hedge. And we may be there, or very close, because the target I put out on the 10-year was 3.24%. We got as high as, I think, 3.16 or 1.7%. So we were just about there, and now rates have, they came down for a little bit, and now they are headed back up again, perhaps to that target. But currently 10-year trading at 3.05%. So a little bit of a rally could take us up to what I think would be an opportune buying point for treasuries. And of course, you take a step back from the barbell, and you're never doing badly to buy stuff that everybody hates. And I don't think you could get a better example of that, really, than bonds and gold. They are pretty much universally reviled, and people look at bonds and think, my God, with this horrific inflation, why should I be even thinking about bonds? Well, the answer goes to something I've been writing about really just very stridently over the last few months, and that is that this inflation we're having is about to choke itself off. You know, we're about to, gasoline prices can only go so high before they begin to terminate economic activity in a way that produces a recession, or much worse than that, that will certainly bring rates down. So that's what the play is, essentially.
Rick, anything else on top of your mind we should be chatting about, or have we wrapped up the show?
I think we've covered it all. We could go into, I always get interesting mail about COVID, and now the mortality rate is so out of kilter with the party line. But we'll leave COVID for another day. And all I can say is that, it feels like stocks are in distribution now, but they seem to be in no great rush to take another big leg down.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you for inviting me on, Jim. I really appreciate a chance to talk to your guys.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.